We are live. Welcome to the Simply Ordinary podcast. I apologize for being away for a couple days out of town, but we are back now. Today's I'm joined by a very, very, very smart individual. He's currently working on his master's in criminal justice. Overall, a very informed individual. I will say to anyone who is listening to this, take out your pen and paper because you would probably be schooled on a lot of information today.
I don't think so, but whatever. We'll just have to wait for the viewer, for the listeners to decide that, but whatever.
Well, let me introduce him again. This is Javier Rodriguez.
What's up, everybody? How you guys doing out there?
I hope everyone's ready for this, for today's podcast.
Wasn't I supposed to be joined by somebody?
We were supposed to be joined by our friend Rene Gonzalez, but...
That fucking fat ass. He always fucking flakes, man. I'm not surprised. Unless there's fucking food here, then he'll show up. But it's cool, man. Well, he'll come by next time, and we'll just have to, like, drop it down next time with that fucker.
I'm surprised he did not come, because we're going to Dickie's after this. So I would figure he would be he'd be very inclined to come, but I guess not, you know?
Nah, he's fucking retarded sometimes. I don't know. I'm just saying. He thinks like the world revolves around him because he's a big guy. I'm a big guy too, but I don't know, I think he thinks the world revolves around him more.
Also claims he's a mechanic, so we don't know.
Yeah, I don't think so. He sucks. He's been working on a car for like years and he still can't even fucking finish it.
What kind of car was that one?
That's the fucking green that's not a Camaro. I don't know what the hell it is.
It's but a Pontiac, right?
You know, oh, yeah, it's the Pontiac. Yeah, that's right. But he has never finished it, so if you guys think he's a great mechanic, he's not. And hopefully he listens to this and he'll call me out on it.
So this weekend, I was able to drive a Ford Fusion. It's 2015. Powerful car.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the EcoBoost had me flying through the freeway. I swear, like, at one point, I looked down. I was almost at 110 miles per hour without even realizing it. Yeah, those cars. Ford is stepping it up. That's definitely for sure. You know, they've definitely designed newer engines for all around cars and trucks. And I know you're more of a truck guy, right?
Yeah, definitely. I drive a Ford F-150. Had it for 2 years now. Yeah, 2 years. Gonna come up on 3 years next year. And I love it. It's a great truck. It's the EcoBoost FX4, so it pulls hard, man. You know, I like the car.
But
like
what is EcoBoost?
So EcoBoost is like a certain kind of, it's like a boost for the car. Kind of the way that I was explaining it is like it's a V6 with V8 power. So it like helps you save gas, because I used to have the V8, I used to have a V8 truck, and that was a gas guzzler. The most I ever got out of it was about like 17 miles per gallon. It was bad.
That's high for a truck.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. So I got this one in on the freeway. Sometimes I get like 22, 23 miles per gallon. And it's a big car. It's a big truck. So it's cool. I like it. I
mean, super spacious.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I did my homework when I was buying this, so I like it. You know, people talk bad about Ford or whatever, but I think they make a great line of trucks and vehicles. So yeah, it's cool.
Well, in general, their parts are always super cheap. You can say that. And they're new aluminum, right? They're aluminum.
Yeah, the new aluminum body. Yeah. I heard it sucks. I mean, I have one of my friends has one, but it gets dented really easily. I mean, it's light, 700 pounds lighter, but I don't know. It just depends, I guess.
Well, I don't know, man, but I guess to anyone listening, whatever you like, you know.
I guess.
So did you watch the presidential debates yesterday?
I did not. I was in class, but I did get a little bit of I saw some stuff on Twitter. I saw some stuff on online, and I didn't really care about the debate, to be honest. Like, I mean, both candidates, just I guess you can say that just both don't really appeal to me. You know, Hillary, yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, I'm a registered Democrat voter, but I'm not gonna vote for Hillary. I'm not gonna vote for Hillary. Trump, he's a wild man, and I don't know, I just didn't watch it.
But I like the idea of Trump.
I mean, he's definitely a different kind of guy. He's a wild guy. He's different than a lot of other candidates that we've ever had. But I don't know. I don't think you want to trust somebody that has had more than 3,000 lawsuits, you know, over the course of 30 years of his business career, I believe. So I don't know. I don't think that that's a responsible person, because if you think about someone that's been sued, you think to yourself, oh, that's irresponsible. How would they be sued? Why would they be sued? So I don't know. I just don't think Trump is a candidate that should run a country. If he runs runs a successful business, but you can't compare a business to a country.
Well, Hillary called him out on being called him out on basically on him kind of a long record of engaging racist behavior. Mm-hmm. And because he was being sued by I think back in 80 something, or it might have been 70 something. Mm-hmm. He was getting sued by a bunch of workers. They're saying that he was engaged in racist behavior to them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know a lot about like his racist background or anything, but I mean, I guess you can say his dialogue in terms of like Mexico and what he's been saying about Muslims and all that stuff. It's something that if you're the leader of the free world, which the United States considered, I don't think you should be saying those things, and I think you should be kind of keeping a tighter lid on especially on race relations. But hey, I mean, he's running for president. He's the Republican nominee, so I guess there's a good portion of Americans that saw something good in him.
And when it comes to foreign relations, that's a huge part of this whole presidential election. Yeah. Because in general, when you start thinking of let's talk about Syria for a second. Mm-hmm. You know how they're set up, and mm-hmm. the terrorists they have over there, and you just take them off a little bit more, they're gonna want to retaliate more and more and more, right? I mean, even if you look at how Russia in general.
Well, I don't think it's about that. I think if terrorists want to do terrorism things, they're gonna do them regardless. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just a matter of controlling the global terrorism. You know, mm-hmm. everyone talks about it's contained Syria, but it's not just one country. It's a whole mess. You know, look what happened in New York a couple weeks back. Mm-hmm. You know, and what's happened all throughout the year. You know, it's been a short year so far. I mean, we're big in amateur October. I mean, we're heading towards the end of it. But all the stuff that's happened, all the things that ISIS has taken kind of responsibility for, it's crazy. It's mm-hmm. crazy to think of all that. But hey, you know, we live in a big world, and the world's getting bigger. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I guess, it's part of the changing time.
It is part of the changing time, and we, you know, as you said, everything that's been happening in this country in general, we were looking at the jihadists that mm-hmm. live in the area, then we have like the global ones mm-hmm. who live currently in the United States. So a lot of them aren't part of the terrorist organization of ISIS, but they claim to be, like the San Bernardino shooters, am I right?
Well, there's so many different like jihadist movements that it's not just about ISIS. Mm-hmm. ISIS is the one that probably gets more notoriety, but there's a lot. You know, Al-Qaeda's still around. The Taliban still exists. So, you know, back in the day, it used to be like you had to go to these countries in order to get like jihadist training. You mm-hmm. had to go, and then, you know, they would kind of like indoctrinate you or baptize you into mm-hmm. that kind of world. But nowadays, it's just so easy as getting on a computer and just like looking at stuff about ISIS and mm-hmm. what it is, or the jihadist movement, you know, all this stuff, Sharia law, which has to do with, you know, conforming to the rules of Islam. Mm-hmm. So it's just like I think technology has kind of pushed it to the way that you don't have to be in these countries anymore to be a radical mm-hmm. a radicalist. You can just be at the comfort of your home and read a couple of pages about, you know, the thinkings of some of these guys, and that's all it takes, you know. But yeah, that's really the information world that we live in, and it's not like it used to be back then.
Yeah, exactly. And now even getting a gun is so much more easier. Do you agree with that?
Well, it just depends where you live. I think mm-hmm. California is one of the states that they've been passing a lot of legislation to mm-hmm. kind of deter people from buying guns. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's just, I guess, it depends where you live, but it's really easy to get guns. You know, I mean, it just doesn't take a lot of doing. You know, you find friends that have a gun, and they say, oh, my friend has a gun over here. And, mm-hmm. you know, it kind of just leads to one thing after another. And mm-hmm. by the time you know it, you know, you have a couple $100, you can go buy a gun without, you know, having to go through the background checks. I mean, it's illegal, but it's doable. And that's the thing that they're trying to kind of solve, is how do you get rid of that? But mm-hmm. you know, when there's a demand, there's a supply, and that's the way that it works. And I don't think that I'm really putting all these laws can stop all the gun problems that America has.
Well, why instead of like trying to stop the buying of guns, why don't we try to make people lazy to get the guns? Like, let's make certain laws. Like, let's say this: every 3 months you have to register. You mm-hmm. have to go back and register your gun. Mm-hmm. Just how, like, possibly, let's say every You also have to get a fingerprint on the on the trigger. I know they're starting to make guns like that, right? They're starting where the fingerprint is triggered it triggers your trigger for the gun, right?
Well, I mean, technology is moving so fast that it's possible that that's happening, but you know, it doesn't really like deter someone. If they really want to get something, they'll do it. And I mean, yeah, you know, like I said, you can pass as many laws as you want, but you know, there's always gonna things be available.
Yeah,
you know,
take your drive out to Nevada and go buy a gun.
Exactly. You know, go to Arizona has really gun laws. Texas has really easy gun laws. Oklahoma has really, so a lot of these southern states, or not southern, but predominantly more conservative states have very easy gun laws. So, you know, you can just, it's easy as going to buy one. You know, you take 2 weeks off and you can go get one. Here in California, it's you buy one, you have to wait 10 days for your background check to clear, and then you can go get your gun. You know, you can purchase it in advance, but you have to wait till you pass all these different things in order for you to be able to go claim it and have it in your possession.
Well, on this background check, what consists of that background check? What do they look at? Because in general, if you're a felon, you could probably still buy a gun, can't you?
Yeah, I mean, there's a large black market for anything. You know, yeah, like I said, you can go buy a fake visa. You can go buy a fake passport. Mm-hmm. There's a black market for everything. But in these background checks, I've never had one done. But from my understanding, is that they just make, you know, check if your record has ever been like in contact with like a mental health or police, and I think any red flag, then they'll deny you the opportunity to buy a gun here at least here in California. Different states have different laws, so I'm not too sure what other states kind of do.
And see, what I say, at least, If you've ever been convicted of a felony, you should, like, especially, it doesn't matter what kind of felony it is. If you have any type of record, you should, at least in my opinion, you shouldn't even be able to buy a gun, a weapon, because you're showing that you're not responsible enough to carry on simple laws. Imagine a gun.
Well, I think that's how it is now. You know, if you have committed a crime, I don't think that they allow you to buy a gun. So, I mean, I think that's already in the books. At least here in California, I think if you've been convicted even of a misdemeanor for certain crimes, you're not allowed to be able to buy a gun, let alone even carry one. So, and it just depends, I guess.
And yeah, it makes it, at least in my opinion, is just make it more difficult for people, or make people more lazy to even own a gun. Because like I said, if you implement like every 3 months having to go register, and having the fingerprint on the trigger, your fingerprint, so you can't let friends borrow it, or you can't purchase a gun for a friend. But
yeah, but that's inconvenient, because I mean, not everyone that has a gun or buys a gun is going to be a criminal. You know, there's a lot of very good law-abiding citizens that they're never going to do none of those things, and for them to have to go through all those things, that's where it kind of, you know, is inconvenient. And that's where I kind of see it as, is like, you know, why are you going to put all these laws when not everybody commits crimes? Yeah, I mean, it's more seen in the news nowadays, because I guess media has made it easier to be seen. But you know, gun violence has existed for a long time, and I think it's just the culture of America, and that's what we need to kind of go at first. But hey, I guess
especially all this police brutality, do you feel the police in general should have less power? But we can't do that, right? I mean,
it's hard to say. I mean, it's difficult to kind of put a grasp on that, because I mean, you gotta think of it as kind of like a cat and mouse game. You know, it depends who you want to place as the cat, or who you want to place as the mouse. You know, it could be the cops or the people, whatever it might be. But you know, cops are constantly trying to deal with criminals, and criminals are kind of trying to deal with law enforcement. So it's very difficult to say. I don't think that you can take away necessarily the power of police, because we need them. We need them. We definitely need police. I mean, I want to be a police officer as well. So I think it just depends on that, and I think it's just the culture of America. I believe that we've gone to a culture that's really really rude, so we kind of see law enforcement as whatever, they're just pigs or whatever, and we can't treat them like that. You know, I think there was probably a time in which cops were a little bit more more revered, but not anymore. And now cops are not.
And Trump yesterday, he was talking about how the community, the police community, has to try to fit in more with like their population areas, to become not friends, but at least in a way kind of like friends. And that's how you bring down violence. But then again, you have places like in Charlotte right now, all the riots that they've been having, and the police are trying to control that, but the people don't realize they're the ones sometimes inciting all these protests that lead to gun violence, that lead to killing of police officers. And police officers are, yeah, in general, they're not supposed to kill an ordinary civilian because they have had more training to not do that, or they probably even haven't. I mean, nowadays, do you even think cops are that required to know how to defend themselves as much?
Well, I think that it kind of comes down to, like, there's a level of escalation that you're, it's called the level of escalation of violence, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that's how it goes. I'm not too sure, to be honest, but you know, there's a certain levels that you're supposed to kind of go through before you take out your gun. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of officers have just found it easier just to pull out a gun in the first place. I think officers probably need to be trained a little bit more in hand-to-hand combat. Mm-hmm. I think that a little bit better negotiation to kind of really just figure out what's going on. You know, and especially like a lot of the crimes that have been happening in terms of like shooting or gun officer to suspect to officer has been in states where they have you know, very, very strong attitudes about race. And I think that's a lot has to do with it. You know, yeah, the Charlotte thing that's been going on. Mm-hmm. Then you had the incident in Dallas over the summer. Mm-hmm. Then you had the incident in Ferguson, Missouri. So it's just a lot. It's just so many different things that it's hard to put something to it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's hard. It's hard to say.
And do you feel, at least do you feel cops are getting punished enough for these type of events? Or are they getting away with it?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I think you can kind of look at it from two different sides. You know, cops are just like us. You know, they're just regular people. They, you know, they do their job. They signed up for a job that a lot of people normally wouldn't do. So, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say, because if you begin to kind of, you know, place the blame on every police officer, then I think you're kind of giving police a bad name. So it just depends. I think that it's going to take a lot more. I think that courts need to kind of look at a lot more evidence, but it just depends.
And the court system is pretty much screwed up in this country, if you agree with me on that.
Yeah, of course.
We put ordinary civilians do not even know the difference between what right and right is, and now we have them selecting who's going to be guilty or not guilty. And if you know too much of the court system, they don't even allow you to be part of the jury.
Yeah, I did jury duty a couple of years ago, and I was one of the first ones that was out. They during the voir dire, they told me, hey, you know, thanks for coming down, but you're not going to be one of the jurors. So I don't know. I think that I think the federal government does a good job in selecting their grand jury than the state does. And I think that but not every crime is a federal crime, this thing. So I think that we need to kind of model a little bit more after the federal courts and the way that they do it. They do it in a more kind of a voluntary manner. So I think they definitely do pick a lot of people that know more about the legal system. And I mean, but I guess you gotta have to look at it too, is like you have to hope that the criminal justice system works, because what about if one day you're on that side of it? So you have to want it to work, that way it can work for you, but sometimes it can work against you. So it just I think a lot of people are quick to put a bad finger on criminal justice, but it's just you kind of have to want it to work, you know. You have to want it to work for you and for others. So yeah, it's time that we kind of begin to really look at the criminal justice for what it can be and what it should be, than what rather the things that it's not. So
yeah, it's kind of like a couple years back. Remember the boxer Dewey something?
I forgot. Oh yeah, Dewey Bozell. Yeah.
Well, he was put in prison for something he never did.
I think he was put in prison for either for rape or something like that. Mm-hmm. I think it was or was it for, I'm not sure what it was, but yeah he was put in prison for killing somebody. I'm not sure
if that was put under the state or federal.
That was a state, I think so.
And he got sent a good 20 years, right,
in prison. He was in prison for a while. I think it more like 20, more than 25 years.
Yeah, and that goes off of these ordinary civilians. I mean, I'm not saying it's not, I mean, it's our right to be able to be put on there, and it's a privilege, I guess, to say that as well, be able to try someone like that. But they don't, I guess sometimes people don't even know what they're getting. They just automatically judge a person from from the instance, you know, once they see them, like once they see, when he's sitting right there, like, oh
yeah, it's insane. He got off of the Innocence Project, which is a project that is nationwide, that prisoners kind of have to submit appeals to them, and then they'll go and they'll do whatever they have. I'm not too sure about the Innocence Project, but I have heard of it. And he was able to go through that, and that's the reason why he was found not guilty after so many years. I think it was, had come down to the jury. I think they saw some DNA that wasn't real or was fabricated. I'm not too sure, to be honest, but it's just it was a difficult case, I think, for him. And he pled his innocence throughout the entire thing, and in the end, I think that when the court reopened the case, they were able to see that he was actually innocent.
But why do they shelve these cases a lot of times? Why do they put it off? If there's obviously an innocent man sitting there, why do they shelve him?
It's hard. You don't know. The thing is, like, everybody that goes to court, everyone that goes to jail says they're always innocent.
True that, yeah.
So, like, you're dealing with people, like, everyone that goes to jail, like, oh, I didn't do it. So, that's where it's hard. Like, you're like, oh man, like, you didn't do it, so who did do it? So that's like the hard thing to kind of figure out, is like everyone goes into this thing like, oh, I'm innocent. So that's what a court tries to find, is they try to find like the truth. And it's not always the right, it's not they always don't find the right truth, you know. So evidence is brought in, and I actually was like really like interested, like in the OJ trial, you know, the ESPN one that they did, the 30 for 30 series. And you know, how he was able to get away with the murder. I mean, whether he did it or not, that's up to discussion. And whoever you ask, they'll give you a different response. But it kind of shows you like the way that a defense can make a good case extremely dirty. And it was crazy, you know, watching that. And I never knew that, because I was a really little kid when all that stuff was going on. So, you know, just watching that, and you know how they pinned everything on a cop that he never had anything to do with it. So it was crazy. It was really, really an interesting case to observe, and looking back upon it. So it's just sometimes if you don't have the money, man, you're gonna have to go to jail, and that's kind of what it comes down to, is the bigger the bank, the bigger the chances you are of you getting out.
But and in this country, we talk about equality, we talk about everyone being equal as one, you know? And it says in our constitution, and in our Declaration of Independence, it says it all there. Well, obviously now we see money is power, right?
Of course.
And power is money.
Of course.
So there's nothing fair about this court system that we are in.
Yeah, I mean, nothing's fair in life, you know. Like, I think that's the one thing too, is like, nothing's ever going to be fair, you know. Everyone comes into this world with, you know, they have the chance of either being rich or being poor, you know. And I mean, yeah, it just depends, you know. I mean, but I think, like I was mentioning earlier, you know, you got to just put the faith in the criminal justice system that it works. And sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't, you know. And yeah, fortunately, if you do have a little bit more money, you're going to be able to do a little bit more. You're going to be able to provide for an attorney that's going to be able to help you out more. You're going to be able to kind of do things in a fashion that the regular Joe wouldn't be able to normally do.
And even like, okay, so you're on the trial. Let's say you're on trial for murder. You could keep appealing all that stuff, right? But so while you're appealing, are you in jail, or are you still out of all those boundaries?
Yeah. So like when there's different levels to, like, you first, when you get arrested, you go through the whole booking thing, and then you'll go through everything. You're gonna show up to court. You're gonna go through an arraignment, and there the judge is gonna tell you what you've been charged for, and you're gonna plead. You're going to plead either guilty or not guilty. You're going to plead no contest or whatever it might be, you know, whatever the thing might be. And then from there, you're going to obviously say what you got to say. Usually by that time, you've been consulted by an attorney as to what you're going to plead. So from there, you're going to go into your trial. You're going to do the pre-trial stuff. That's when a jury will be selected. And then obviously you'll go into the preliminary hearing, which is when your attorneys kind of open up for you. And then you go through hearings, and you'll go through evidence. And then finally, everything comes down to to the last day, not the last day, but the day where the closing statements by the your defense and the prosecution, and then from there it's up to the jury to make a decision, and then the jury will come back and they'll tell the judge what they've decided, and then the judge will do a sentence. So once the judge sentences you, then that's when you go to jail, and then that's when you begin the appeal process, and when you can kind of say, oh, then you know we're going to try with this court, and then in America we call the it's called the appellate court, the federal level. Here it's called the state court of appeals. So it just depends where your appeal goes to.
So if you appeal it in the state level, and you want to go to, like, say, to a federal level, that's more going to, like, the Supreme Court.
And it's not as easy as just jumping from a state to the federal. There's certain things that you eventually have to go through. You can send it to a federal court for having terminal review, but they're not always going to take it. A lot of people, let's just go to the Supreme Court, but by the time it gets to the Supreme Court, it has to be like a landmark case. You're talking about like something that's like constitutionally wrong. So the amount of cases that make it to the Supreme Court are really minimal, because there's just so many cases that are sent over there. They'll sit down, they'll take a look at it, and then they'll decide whether it's a case that they have to review, and then if it's not, then they'll just throw it out.
So like when we get back to these gun control, it's our Second Amendment that we are allowed to bear arms. But if I'm pretty sure you know the sentence before that, which is something that has to do with the militia, which during the time that the Second Amendment was written was during a time when we were in a war.
That's right, yeah.
So people are completely flipping that the wrong way. They're not saying you have to, or your right to own a gun is like, you could keep it in your house for self-defense.
Sure.
But the time it was written in was for military purposes.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know if people have heard of Justice Scalia. He was one of the biggest, like, he was a constitutionalist kind of judge. So he followed the Constitution word for word, and he passed away earlier this year. And he believed that the Second Amendment, you know, you had the right to bear arms, because that's what it said. Yeah, it's up for discussion, but I mean, the right to bear arms, like, it's not worded for today's, you know, because bear arms, like, where are we really under attack? Like, no, like, but it's just, I guess it just depends. That's the legality of it. So I don't know.
You can't ban guns because that's unconstitutional, right?
According to the Constitution, it's unconstitutional. So I don't know.
And in general, you just can't ban guns. You know, obviously, it'll be something short of impossible to do.
Yeah, that definitely is. Because you can't ban everything. Like, later you're gonna start banning just about every possible thing you can. I mean, cars are dangerous. Yeah, so should we ban? But cars or what? Knives are dangerous. What, should we not ban cars as well? I mean, knives. So it just depends. I mean, it's just, I think whatever's trending, that's what people are going to try to ban. That's kind of how it works.
I think, I'm not even saying I'm preaching to this, but I mean, I think America in general is like, I guess they're so pessimist and try to be realist at the same time that they put you in the middle that's just paranoid, right? So we'll practically, let's look at North Korea. You know, North Korea is limited to 20 websites what they could use.
Yeah.
So now, what if America does that? Let's say America puts a restriction on how much we can search up on the internet. I mean, they practically almost have, because you can't search up certain guns on Google. You can't search up certain things because obviously that movie Snowden, how they showed the NSA has certain looks for certain searches on these search engines and stuff. Edward Snowden basically exposed all that, what the NSA has been doing wrong with the CIA, FBI, all these law enforcement agencies, and he proved it. And so, as I find it kind of extreme that how you're still embarking in this mission to become part of that whole justice system or that whole law enforcement system. How do you view all that kind of stuff?
I mean, it's like, it's up for discussion. Like, everyone has their opinion about it. You know, like, depending who you ask, they're gonna say, oh, like, this is wrong or that's wrong. Like, depending on how people perceive things, you know, their upbringing has to do a lot with it. So I don't know. I mean, are we, like, as bad off as Korea or Cuba or these countries that are communist states? Like, no, we have it pretty good. But the thing is, like, the one thing that I heard back in school was if you want security, you're gonna have to give up a little bit of privacy. And perhaps that's true. You know, perhaps that's true. We're still one of the more safer countries in the world, where we can go out to the mall and definitely walk around and not have, you know, the thought in your, not, you're not always thinking about, oh, what's bad's going to happen. I have that thought whenever I go to like a big city like San Francisco. I'm like, damn, I hope nothing fucking bad happens here. But I mean, for the most part, I always feel pretty comfortable. I never, you know, feel like, oh, like this is going to happen bad, because I'm always like kind of, you know, I feel like I'm pretty aware of my surroundings. So I think it's just a matter of how you feel and how, where you live. Like, we live in a pretty, I think we live in a pretty safe area. Like, I mean,
predominantly people, liberal.
Yeah, I guess. California, for the most part, is a pretty safe state. So I don't know. I mean, it overall just depends on where you live, your upbringing, and who's around that's going to kind of dictate whether or not you feel safe or not.
And like, when you look at a state like Texas, and their whole gun control rights and stuff they have, they're able to carry a gun.
Yeah,
and
open carry. Yeah.
So is that better, or is that possibly the same thing as letting these criminals walk around with a gun?
It just depends. I mean, I think that it's their culture and it's worked. So I don't think that for them it's such a big problem. I think that another thing that has to do with it is that Texas has really strict laws for murder. So I think in Texas, if you kill somebody and if you commit capital, it's a capital punishment. You know, you can get the death penalty, and they're really strong on enforcing that. Here in California, we quote unquote have a death penalty, but we haven't used it since 2003 or 2004. So it's been a while since the last time someone was executed. So we just keep on putting all these criminals or people on death row, but they're not going anywhere. So I guess you can say, you know, it depends where you commit a law, where you commit a crime is kind of the, how do you feel about the laws.
And the last person who was put on death row here in California is Stan Tookie Williams, right? Something like that.
I think he was one of the last. I'm not sure if he was definitely the last.
That was approved by Schwarzenegger, right?
Yeah, it was approved by Schwarzenegger. So it was a while ago. So it means that, back in 2006. It was pre-2006, I believe, the last time there was someone that was executed here. And,
now, is there still countries out there that who believe in the death penalty? Like, if you commit a crime, you're automatically dead?
China
does
Iraq,
it?
Iraq, I believe. I think China does it. North Korea.
Oh, obviously them, yeah.
I think there is a couple countries out there that still use the death penalty. Well, none of the, like, more civilized countries.
Well,
like
Iraq, they hung Saddam, right?
Yeah, they their laws, they were able to hang him.
I remember that back what was it, 2005, I think, when they caught him, and they basically hung him on national television, or they showed the clips before he got hung.
Yeah, I think America is one of the first world countries that still does executions, like the death penalty.
And speaking of Iraq, Donald Trump, it's funny that they're getting him so bad yesterday, because supposedly he was an advocate, or he was for the war, and back when we invaded Iraq and Afghanistan, he was there's a lot of these things saying supposedly he's for it, and the entire time he's like, no I wasn't for it. And in general, that war was, and I don't know how you see it, but it's kind of pointless for us to have gone into Iraq.
It was pointless. For the reasons, like, we never found anything. The whole reason that the Bush administration said that we were going in there was for weapons of mass destruction, but there was never anything found. So a lot of people say that it was a war for oil, and it was a war for control of the Middle East. And there's a lot of truth to that. But I'm not too sure, to be honest. I'm not really big on the whole war thing or anything like that. Afghanistan, obviously, you know, because of what happened on 9/11, whether people believe that's true or not, then that's up to them. But, you know, I guess everyone has their own opinion.
These conspiracies of how supposedly the government has set up the whole 9/11, it's a little extreme. It's not, I mean, a lot of these extremists, in a way, go a little overboard with their conspiracies.
I don't know. I mean, that's just like a wormhole that you can go on for days. Like I said, it just depends. Know who you ask. So, like, oh yeah, it was a conspiracy, or oh yeah, yeah, not government did 9/11. But I don't know. I think that however you look at it on both sides, there was a lot of things that had to have happened in order for that to really fall through. So it just depends. I don't know. I really don't have much of a clue as to what actually happened, because I wasn't there. I mean, I was only in the fucking fifth grade when that shit happened. So I really didn't know. And I mean, anything that happens nowadays, everyone's going to pin a conspiracy to it. Mm-hmm. Oh, the government did this for gun right or for gun control. Oh, the government did this for that. Mm-hmm. Oh, the government. So, like, if you really think about it, like, anything can be a conspiracy. Like, any little thing that can happen can be mm-hmm. a conspiracy. I was mentioning the Justice Scalia. Mm-hmm. They say that was a conspiracy, the reason why he died. They say they think someone poisoned him. I don't know. Everything. I guess everything nowadays can just, you know, have a little bit of conspiracy attached to it.
It's like the movie The Zeitgeist. You've seen that?
Yeah,
right?
I've seen it.
This whole conspiracy, supposedly how the government planned the recession back in the depression back in 1930s, 1929, right?
Yeah.
And they planned the World War II. They set up the whole thing. FDR did it on purpose to be able to invade, to go to war. I have a reason to enter the war, uh-huh. because of Japan. He wanted Japan to bomb us, supposedly. Uh-huh. And it's a little too extreme. I mean, FDR in general was according to a lot of people back in the day, he was one of the greatest presidents that we ever had, because he had four terms, right, or something like that.
Yeah, four terms, but I don't think it was his terms that kind of like made him a great president. I think mm-hmm. it was a lot of the things he kind of did for America post mm-hmm. The Great Depression. Like mm-hmm. he did the New Deal, mm-hmm. which brought in a lot of positives to them. I think that was the time that Social Security was created. Nowadays, yeah. it's a failing mm-hmm. failing system because of our national debt. But I mean, it was FDR did a lot of good things for America at that time. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really, like I said, I'm not really too sure 100% on everything he actually did. Mm-hmm. But you know, historians. I always thought of him as one of the top five presidents of all time.
So do you think if it wasn't for like him going for those four terms and they finally put like a halt on that, mm-hmm. You think Obama would go for his third term right now?
I don't know.
Judging off the fact of our candidates,
because I mean the thing is, like, you know, like the reason why they're the eight years or the two terms are placed mm-hmm. is so that we don't have a dictatorship. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I feel that even if Obama, like, he's a good president. I mean, I think he's been a good president. People, mm-hmm. like I said, will have their own opinion, but I think he's done a pretty good job of definitely bringing America back to a stable kind of place compared to where we were in 2008 mm-hmm. when we had the housing crisis and all that stuff. So I don't know. It just depends, I think, on that. Mm-hmm. But I think that we should always have a change. You know, mm-hmm. every 8 years or every 4 years, we should have the opportunity to have someone else be in office. You never know, man. You know, like, there are new ideas that always create different dynamic.
Now, this stands out to me all the time. Like, the other day when we were talking off the podcast, you told me that there will be another recession or possibly mm-hmm. depression. You're certain of that?
Well, if you look at economics, like, it's like since the depression of 1929, there has always been a recession at least every 20 to 30 years. Mm-hmm. And then I think the one that was the biggest after post 1929 was 1970s. Mm-hmm. There was another recession that was pretty big, mm-hmm. and that's when kind of gas was scarce in America. Mm-hmm. And then if you fast forward it a couple years later, in the 2000s or 1990 something, there was another little recession, and then mm-hmm. obviously in 2008 we had another one. So I think in the next 10-20 years, we'll probably face another recession that will kind of hurt the American economy. That's just economics. Economics mm-hmm. is always going up and down. Mm-hmm. It's always constantly moving, because mm-hmm. obviously the world's getting bigger, so mm-hmm. there has to be a lot of money coming in, mm-hmm. coming out. So
now in 2008, when this whole mm-hmm. housing market crash happened, mm-hmm. Did you view that as Americans not being well informed?
It kind of just depends how you say malinformed, because I think that when that happened, it was just a combination of post 9/11. Mm-hmm. It was a combination of the economy just heading in a different direction. So mm-hmm. a lot of people say it had to do with the administration and on that, but I don't know. I mean,
it was Bush, the reason why all that failed.
I think it failed because people started getting greedy. And you know? Yeah. People started getting really greedy. They wanted money fast, and let's just take advantage of the biggest thing in America is the housing market. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone believed, oh, the housing market's always going to be like very very strong, and then you come to find out that there was people that were making a lot of money on, off of these high interest rates that people would lock people into. So it was just it was a mess. It was a complete and utter mess. And I think that now we have a lot of laws in place to kind of keep that from prevent that from happening. But I think it's just gonna go to a point where I think it's gonna be a world recession, not just
a world recession,
kind of how it was back in 2008, because it was a world recession, because the money is so interconnected with each other. You know, America feeds off of China, China feeds off America, China feeds off of Europe, Europe feeds off of China, China feeds off of America, America feeds off of Europe. So it's just like a cycle of things.
It was like a couple months ago, right, when China's economy was just tanking.
they were in turmoil, they were heading down, and the world economy has actually been in a little bit of a kind of a shakeup. You know, I always compare it to kind of like, it's just like the way that's what happens. You know, you need a haircut. Everyone needs a haircut. And that's just how the world is. You know, sometimes the world just like it looks good, and other times it just looks bad. So that's just the way that it goes.
And right now we're looking bad.
It depends. I mean, I think that we're at a good point right now. If you look at it, if you look at the from 2010 to now, it's 6 years later, we've definitely been increasing. You know, so I think there's a lot of positivity, but it's just normal for there to always be a recession and for the economy to kind of take a hit every once in a while. It's normal in the long term of things. Obviously, in the short term, people panic, which is true. It's normal, you know, because I would panic too, because I've been investing now for about 3 years. So you know, whenever I look at my kind of, you know, investments and stuff like that, whenever I see like reds, I'm just like, fuck, you know, like I'm losing money here. But that's just part of economics, is that it just goes ups and down, up and up, up and down.
So now in 2008, when we go back to this a little bit, when we're talking about the housing market, when that crashed, and people are taking advantage of high interest rates and stuff, why was it failed? Why did the at least the most stablest market in our system, why did that fail?
Well, if you watch the movie The Big Short, they probably do a lot better job of explaining it than I can. In smaller ways, you can kind of put it as banks started to encourage people to buy houses, and when you buy a house, you get a mortgage on it, right? So the way that they would do it is that they would lock you in on this rate, and then it'd say they call it a fixed rate, and a fixed rate is a rate that you're going to pay for the duration of your loan.
That's right.
So let's say you get a $20,000 loan, which is really small for a house, but we'll just make it in smaller terms. If they're charging you a 10% fixed rate, you're paying $2,000 on a $20,000 loan, because that's 10%.
Yeah.
So the bank started saying, hey, let's just throw out these variable loans. So variable loans are loans that vary over time. So they're based on the market of the United States.
Okay.
So what happened is that when in 2007 was when these loans were going to start kind of kicking in. So that's when there was going to be a change in all of this. So in 2007, that's when the economy kind of started taking a little bit of a down spiral, because that's when all of these loans started to default. People couldn't start making payments on them. And in that movie, The Big Short, they're kind of looking at it aside from how people bet against the market to fail. And that's kind of how everything just began to fall apart. So the rates started rising because people couldn't pay. So the less people paid, the higher the rates went, because the banks needed to find a way to get their money. So then they were just jacking up the rates, almost to where a point where some people were paying up to like 50% interest rates.
Jesus.
That's how high. Even I'm pretty sure it could have gone even higher than that. The variable rates just started going off the charts. So banks had to, hey, we need our money. People couldn't pay, people would default, people couldn't pay, people would have to lose their house. And all this started happening so fast and so much, because they were making a lot more money off of a variable loan than they were going off of a fixed loan. So it was encouraging for bankers and banks to kind of say, oh, give them, sell these variable rates at people that can't pay them, you know. So then they would take these loans and then eventually people couldn't pay him. So there was like, okay, the banks have accounted for this much money, but now they don't have that much money. Mm-hmm. So that's what you call toxic debt, mm-hmm. is money that you don't have, but mm-hmm. you're accounted for. Mm-hmm. So it was a fucking bad time.
But there's so much stuff. You can obviously hear there's so much illegal stuff going on there. Yeah. And only one guy was basically convicted from this.
Yeah, that's what the movie The Big Short, like at the very end, only one guy was convicted. And it's like now, like you see a couple weeks ago with the Wells Fargo thing, yeah, that's right, the Wells Fargo guy. And a lot of these bankers, they said, oh, like it was upper management that was pushing us to do these things. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's a little scary to think about how much banks get away with and they don't get arrested. And mm-hmm. If you guys will go online and watch the clip of Elizabeth Warren, mm-hmm. which is a senator from Massachusetts, she's like telling the bank, the CEO from Wells Fargo, mm-hmm. I think his name is like Schmuff or something. I don't know what the fuck his name is. I bank at Wells Fargo and I've been considering fucking changing their shit too, because I went back on my statements and there's nothing that was missing. So mm-hmm. I think it's bigger accounts, because when you take away money from a large account, you don't really notice it.
Yeah.
From smaller accounts, people are always, oh shit, like let me check my account. So they affected like a lot larger accounts than smaller ones. But you know, she told him like, hey, you know, you should be criminally charged for this. And he had no response for that, because he knows it's true.
Now could a bank like Wells Fargo crash, just like the Lehman Brothers was the one that crashed in 08?
Well, I don't think that it, I mean anything can fail in life, you know, anything can fail. Mm-hmm. So, but I don't think that Wells Fargo is in that position just yet. Mm-hmm. I think Lehman Brothers failed because they were part of that. They were part of that group that just mm-hmm. did very bad investing, and mm-hmm. they had so much money tied up in the housing market, mm-hmm. and people couldn't pay them. So, I think it was just a bad mix up for them. And they had could declare bankruptcy.
Now, a lot of people tell me it's safer to go with like a credit union in your area.
Yeah, that's true, because a credit union is like, they're just smaller banks, so they really take a lot of more, not pride, I guess, because pride's kind of like it's a very Boy Scout word. I think that they just they have a little bit of a more tighter control on who they kind of bank with and who they allow. And Wells Fargo, let's just take for example the Big Four: Wells Fargo, Chase, Bank of America, and all of these different kinds of institutions are just so big. So for them, it's a little bit easier to get away with doing whatever they do. And I don't know. I mean, I don't bank with the credit union, but I do know a lot of people that have like accounts with them, and they seem to be doing fine. So it just depends. It kind of just depends on that and on that level.
Mm. Well, that's it's a whirlwind of situations we have with this whole banking system, this whole justice system we have in this country. And I said it when we were talking about earlier about the whole whistleblowers a little bit. Uh-huh. We talked about the Snowden movie,
yeah,
and how they can expose a lot of truths, man. Mm-hmm. Snowden being charged for espionage, at least in my opinion, is extreme for the fact that he is just giving the people what they want. He's not going against his country, because he's helping his country out in a way, isn't he? Or, I mean, am I wrong about that?
Yeah, I mean, it just depends. He released information that I think the government didn't want to be released. I don't think he necessarily hurt the government as much as they paint it. I think he just exposed the truth about what the government did. Mm-hmm. But I, from my understanding, I don't think he ever gave like secrets of military capabilities. Mm-hmm. He never gave secrets away on like what the government, you know, he actually obviously he did give what the government is doing, but he never gave up secrets that like could hurt the daily person. Like, I don't think he ever did that. Well, so
he explored most of the truths of the NSA being able to basically turn on your computer's a camera, your phone's camera, and just be completely spy on you if they have a reason to, right?
I guess. Yeah,
or even if they don't have a reason to, they could start up our camera right now. And there's people that are paranoid about that.
Yeah, I mean, they and I guess you can say they should be, because I mean, you don't want anybody like snooping in your house, you know. If you see a person standing outside your window or your door, you're gonna be like, hey, what the fuck. Same thing with that, you know, like you don't want big brother to always be looking over your back. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to have that ability of privacy, but mm-hmm. you know, let's go back. You know, if you want total security, you're gonna have to give up a little bit mm-hmm. of your privacy. But I think that if a government were to do things in the right way, then you know, I don't think that there would be a worry. But mm-hmm. That's not always the case.
And they're allowed. Well, they're not allowed to basically look into your stuff without having their warrant to, but under FISA court you're allowed to, supposedly. And these are courts, it's a private courts, am I
yeah,
right?
They're private courts, yeah. I'm not too sure on like on FISA courts. I've never really like had much of an interest of ever like, you know, looking into them. Mm. So, but my understanding is that yeah, if a FISA court, you can just go. If you're a federal institution like the CIA or the FBI, NSA, all these like, and then you just you tell them like, hey, this is why I need to look into this, and I think that they'll just kind of sign the warrant, and you're off your way. You go look at what you need to do if it's in the sake of protecting the American government or American people.
And especially if we would have had this type of if we had this type of technology back in the day when. Oswald killed Kennedy. You think we would have been able to catch him, or was that also another conspiracy by the government? You know?
I have no idea. I've never really been big on the whole JFK conspiracy. Mm. I'm not a big conspirator myself, to be honest. I'm just not. I don't really. I guess I don't really care for it as much as people like do. I think that if you're into conspiracies, it means that you know you're obviously thinking to yourself that there is a lot of backdoor kind of stuff going on, but I typically don't really have much of an interest in a lot of conspiracies. Yeah, I mean, obviously I have heard of the JFK shit, but I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah, these extremists get on a whole other level when it comes to these conspiracies and stuff. But
yeah,
I know you need to get out of here, man. So we'll leave it at that today. Hopefully I can have you again.
Sure.
Some other day.
Sounds good.
It was a pleasure. I hope everyone enjoyed this podcast and they definitely took their notes on a lot of stuff we said. But then again, I want to say thank you again to Javier Rodriguez.
Anytime.
And we'll see you guys later.
Peace out.